Hi, welcome to Menopause, Marriage and Motherhood, the podcast for women over 45. My name's Karen O'Connor. I'm a blogger, author, entrepreneur, property developer, mother of four, and I've been married for 30 years. I love health and fitness and anything creative, and I'm absolutely fascinated with personal development and psychology. Join me each week for conversations about life beyond 45. I'll have inspiring stories, lots of guest interviews, and tips and tricks to hack our brains so we can intentionally and deliberately create an amazing future for ourselves. If it's your first time here, hit subscribe so you never miss an episode. I'd love it if you share this episode with your friends on social media and let me know your key takeaways because I'd love to hear them. Enjoy and welcome to this episode of the Menopause, Marriage and Motherhood podcast. Thanks for tuning in. I'm talking today with my friend Deborah Corbin. We've actually planned to talk about something completely different, and then something happened that resulted in this conversation coming out. I've left the conversation pretty much exactly as it happened. I've done very little editing on the podcast at all. I didn't know a lot of the things that Deborah shared with me today. I feel completely honoured that she was willing to share what she does. So grab a cup of tea and join us. This is not an easy conversation to be a part of.
You know, have you heard of Kobe Bryant, the basketball legend?
I saw the thing this morning. I don't know who he is, okay. But everybody's
Okay. Yeah. I mean, and I guess... I mean, that's huge over here, obviously. But I mean, just the rawness of that brought my own rawness back up. Like, I'm just like, fighting back tears because of one instant someone's here and they're not, you know, and you don't expect it when it's so sudden like that. Everything is so raw. And I just don't know right now. You know what I mean? I was having a really good day till this just happened. We just found out a little bit ago, and it just brought a lot of emotions up.
It's actually sort of where we've started is actually the perfect place to start because, you know, like you said, it's bringing up your emotions and everything. So can you explain why this has been so impactful on you?
You mean the death of Kobe Bryant?
Yeah.
You know, I guess it was every time somebody dies suddenly, it's such a shock. And you know, this person is a legend, but it has nothing to do with what brought up in me. Is just that whole one minute somebody's here on earth and the next minute they're really gone. And so it just brought back my own rawness with having lost my son 2 years ago. And there's just obviously when it's sudden like that, there's no way to prepare. It's just this ultimate complete, earth-shattering moment that just changes your life and the trajectory of your life really forever.
So what happened? This was just before Christmas 2 years ago, wasn't it?
Yeah. You know, and I really haven't talked much about what happened because I'm very guarded of my own son and his story. And I want people to know my son. If they're going to know his ending, I want people to know his life. I've always been very guarded with sharing what really happened to my son. So my son actually died of a drug overdose. And you know, that statement brings up a lot of judgment in a lot of people's minds, and probably would be in my own mind if this wasn't my own son that I'm talking about, right? Like, you have a picture of somebody who dies of a drug overdose and it's not generally a good one, and that couldn't be farther from the truth. So I guess it's important for me to dispel the myth for people that people who do drugs in their life, that, you know, they're just low lives or losers, because that's the farthest thing from the truth. So in my son's story, his his experience as a young child at around the age of 6, and I say around because I don't know exactly, it was between 6 and 7, I let him go on a week-long trip with my ex-husband, his biological father, and unfortunately, while gone, he was molested by my ex-husband's uncle. And this is a very, very, very sensitive topic for all those who are listening who have been molested. So I want to please be very, very careful with people's emotions because it's really a very serious topic. So when he came back, you know, I had no way of knowing. And he was just a little boy, so he did what most victims of such an atrocity do. They just shove it somewhere deep in their psyche because as a young child, you can't even comprehend what happened. But the scar and the soul-shattering experience has happened. So, you know, fast forward I mean, I guess it's hard for me looking back thinking, oh my gosh, when he came home, I would have been so happy to see him, which I'm sure I was. And I would have said, oh my gosh, did you have fun? And not knowing that something so catastrophic had happened to him. So anyway, and he never did tell. And there were times throughout the course of his adolescence that things just didn't seem right. But as a mom, you kind of have this intuitive understanding that something's not right. But you don't know. You don't know what it is. So, I mean, I can remember even times of even explicitly asking him, has anybody ever touched you inappropriately, done something to you? And it was always no, no, no. And it wasn't that he was lying. It wasn't until his 18th birthday, his graduation from high school, he drank a lot of alcohol that day with his friends. And I guess as the night went on, that the memory flooded into his mind. He had literally suppressed this all those years, which a lot of young victims do. Mm. It came to him that night, and it was more than he could bear. And so he didn't tell anybody. He didn't tell us still. And he went off to college that fall. And we were so happy. We took him to school and moved him in and everything. And that was really the beginning when he had that memory that flooded back. That was the beginning of his experimentation into drugs and alcohol. And, you know, it's not uncommon victims of abuse have drug and alcohol issues because they are definitely trying to self-medicate. They're definitely they have PTSD. That wasn't even really a total a term at that point. They have this, somehow they cause this feeling. They want to hurt themselves. They want to hurt other people. So there's so much going on in there. And my son often told me afterwards, I'll get to the part where he actually told us, but that he wanted to protect me by not telling me, because he knew how shattered I would be. So he tried to keep it. And he kind of had a nervous breakdown his first year at high school. I mean, I guess it wouldn't really be quantified that as, but his anxiety got so bad with just trying to live with this memory and go to school and be away from home. And it was all just too much. And he ended up having to come home mid-year. But we still didn't know. So, you know, I just thought he was having this whole thing about school and everything. But anyway, so what I really, I guess, without going into his entire life story during those years, it was a constant up and down of trying to be what a normal young man would be, but he just couldn't reconcile. There was so much anger within him that this happened. And of course, with the drugs and the alcohol, those things only bring more intensity to emotions, as we all know. So, I mean, he would get in fights at bars, and he would just, you know, and he's so intelligent. And so when he wasn't under the influence, he was trying to manage it. He was trying to think through it and, you know, still trying to keep everybody from it, because the shame that goes with such an experience is obviously a shame you and I don't understand if we haven't experienced that, but they hold such shame, even though, you know, they were the victim in this instance. They were perpetrated, right? But it's still something. It's so shameful. And so, you know, there were periods of drinking and drugs, and then there were periods of sobriety all throughout his young adult life. And, you know, he kept trying to do life, but his anxiety was so extreme. And, you know, he tried counseling many times. And I'm not saying counseling's not good. I think they do need counseling if they've had this experience. But finding somebody who each person or my son could relate to was always, always an issue. And he went to rehab. And, you know, again, they can't reach into the nucleus. And part of that is that he himself could not reach into the real story of what happened, other than saying what happened, but he couldn't really go in there and deal with it, because it would enrage him, because he knew all of the pain and all of the trials and tribulations that he was going through in life were related to that. And he was angry because he should have been, you know, in his mind, through with college and on with the life and blah, blah, blah. He just had so much PTSD and anxiety that it just always got in the way with him doing life the way in which he, in his mind, felt he should be and could be. So, you know, what's remarkable, well, I don't even know where to go with this right now, because there's so many different webs to the story and so many amazing things. He passed away at the age of 35. So from the age of 18 to 35 was literally a roller coaster, up and down and up and down and up and down. And he felt worse and worse about himself with the down part, because, you know, why the heck can't he get his life together, right? Well, I mean, everybody else can seem to do this. What's wrong? Why can't I? But he actually, which is just really, I still don't understand why this happened. He had almost like, what do I want to say? I want to say like, I want to use the word epiphany, but that wasn't it. It was almost like a divine intervention. About a year before he passed, or maybe a year and a half. My timing is off, but probably about a year and a half. See, I don't know how to tell the story, because there's so many little things leading up to this moment, but he had to keep driving up to another state to go and try to get, he has a child, and he was trying to get his parenting rights, because the girl, she and the mom were never married and blah, blah, blah. And on one of the trips up there, sometimes, I mean, he had to drive 13 hours every time to go to the court, because that's how far he lived away from it. And to get up there, and a couple different times he'd get there and everything would be dismissed. And it would just be, it just in make him incense, like, what, you know, and it's just crazy little things. But it was one of those times where he was really, really angry at the court. It didn't even proceed. Some little thing that the girlfriend just put a pause to it. It's just crazy stuff. And he was really, really enraged, and he called me and he was just screaming and crying. And, the next thing, he actually had this divine intervention. We ended up getting off the phone, and he had to pull over because he was having a panic attack. But in the panic attack is when he had this divine intervention. And it all came together for him that all of that had happened for a reason, and that he was going to go to law school, which is what he was planning to do, because he wanted to help fathers with their parental rights, and he knew what he had gone through for many, many years trying to get his rights back, which he ended up getting back before he passed. But he wanted to do that, and it kind of all flashed in front of his mind that even the abuse was so he could understand what was going to happen when people walk through the door, when he was an attorney, if they had these experiences, that he would have this firsthand knowledge of how to help that person. And also, he even had the understanding that the drugs and the alcohol would also, because he was very good at reading people, that if fathers or parents came through the door that had these issues, he'd be able to also understand that. So it gave him, for the first time, an understanding of, or a purpose for all of the misery. Like, he felt relief for the first time in his life. And he called me and he was so happy. And this was just like half an hour after having been so enraged with not being able to finish the court thing. And told me about this whole flash of understanding that ascended upon him. It was truly a miracle. So he started to prepare to go to law school. He was in school full time. He was doing fabulous. And that was like a whole year of getting ready to go to law school, finishing up some classes he needed. And then, you know, the thing about PTSD and this experience for him, like, anytime stress would get to be huge, which he was carrying a full load, plus he was having to drive up and down again to go up to court. There's just a lot of stress on him. And we kept telling him, you know, you don't have to go to law school this fall. You can push this off to the middle of the year. It's not like you're not under any timetable, but he was just under this self-imposed pressure cooker kind of thing. Like, I got to get to law school this fall. Right. And so, you know, he obviously made the decision, to use some drugs, but what happened was the amount of drugs he used, the police told me, was minuscule, but it was fentanyl it was laced with fentanyl. Fentanyl is it's highly, highly toxic. It's some kind of drug that will kill you if it's too much. I mean, it goes directly and it just kills you. And that's what he actually died of. So in his mind, he made the choice, whatever, to bring his anxiety down, to do some type of drugs. But the police said it was a very minuscule amount, but it was the fentanyl. And he died of fentanyl intoxication. So, you know, it's, where do I go from there? I guess if anybody's listening to this, and there's been a lot of miracles since he passed, as far as him connecting with me spiritually, and so many real signs that I've taken pictures of to that he lets me know that he's here with me. And I guess the journey that I've come, that I'm still going through, obviously, in my most current understanding of death is when you lose somebody, especially your child, you know, you're constantly looking for them. It's like, I don't mean with your eyes, I mean with your whole body, your soul, your everything is searching and yearning for that person. Most recently I've come to understand that you can't look for the person where they were, because they don't reside where they were. So you have to see them where they are. And, you know, it's a spiritual realm. And so if you continue to look for them where they were, you kind of stay stuck in a life that really doesn't exist anymore. So this is just my understanding at this point, is somehow accepting that I know he's still with me. Just, I can't hug him and see him, which, believe me, that's huge to try to, you know, let go of.
Well, I really appreciate you telling me all of that, because I wasn't clear of the circumstances of what happened. And that's, so courageous.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he is your son, and it's the hesitation I have when I'm blogging or, you know, doing the podcast or anything. What do I say about my kids? Because, you know, they're people and they do things like we all do that are really annoying or upsetting or dangerous or stupid or whatever, but I don't want to create a listening in other people's minds for who they're not really. And so you talking about all this, I can totally get the fear that you're going to create a listening for who your son wasn't.
Yeah. You know, we're so quick to judge people, and we shouldn't be. We really shouldn't be. Because you just do not know what is internally driving somebody's actions. And, you know, my son was a very beautiful person. And this really did, I want to say, ruin his life. You know, but I also want to say that my son, you know, I mean, this could go on and get into spirituality and things. And so I don't know if that's what you want to talk about, but I will say that my son, his soul knew that he was going to exit this world.
Why do you say that?
Yeah, his soul tried to prepare my soul in a couple of different ways. One of the ways, looking back, was there's been several times where he has told me that he wouldn't be living to be an old person, that he would be dying young. And he would always say it kind of flippantly. And the thing about people who have been abused, they don't they don't put value on their own life. Like they will, they would lay down in front of a train for your life, but do you know what I mean? Like they think they still have that internal feeling that they're not worth anything. But he said that several times, but about a month before he died, I think it was about a month, maybe even just a few weeks before he died. He was in the same room. We were in the kitchen and he was getting ready to go outside and smoke a cigarette, but he was coughing. And I said to him, Graham, oh my God, you got to stop coughing or you got to stop smoking. And he turned all the way around to me, like, cause I was talking to his back cause he was getting ready to go out the door to smoke, but he turned all the way around, faced me. And he said, Mom, I'm not going to live that long. Don't worry about it. And yeah. And it, you know, again, he had said that before, but this particular time was like he shot an arrow into my chest. And I said, Graham, my God, don't say that. Stop it. And he was already gone out the door, like, whatever, Mom, whatever. But it was just this very eerie, the way he turned and his chest to my chest, his eyes to my, it was like, I'm not going to be here that long. And of course, we both went on our way, you know, not to think about it again in that particular instance. And then the other instance, which is really, really interesting, is one day he came down the stairs and he handed me some papers. He goes, hey, look at this. And I picked it up and it was actually a copy of my divorce papers from his biological father, which, I mean, that was like 30 years prior, right? And I said, oh my God, where did you find this? And I guess he was looking for something in the attic and he found these divorce papers and he laid them on the counter and I said, well, leave them there. I want to look at them. And he said, well, okay, but you better look at them because I know you'll lose them because I have a tendency to just pile things up. And he goes, I know you're going to lose them. So he goes, so look at them because I'm going to put them away. I said, oh, okay. And it was before Christmas, as you know, he died on the 22nd of December, but my sister was coming to town and I was cleaning up the counter and I found those papers sitting there. This was a couple weeks later, right? And I'm like, oh, I never really looked at these papers. So I said, I'm going to put these in this particular drawer so I know exactly where they are. So I put them in there. And lo and behold, after my son passed away, and this part I want to make kind of quick, but it's very important to these papers, is obviously I had to contact my ex-husband. And my ex-husband just makes everything in life difficult, hence why he's my ex-husband. But my son died in a different state than where we reside. So his body was in the morgue somewhere else, right? In a different state. And I have two younger children and it was 3 days before Christmas. So I was like, oh my God. I mean, I have a little one that even still believed in Santa. So we decided we would stay home till Christmas and then go there to deal with his body and what we needed to deal with, because obviously there was no reason to, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like it wasn't going to change anything. But in the meantime, my ex-husband was fighting with us about what to do, and we wanted to cremate my son, and he didn't want it, and my son wanted to cremate, blah, blah, blah. So the eerie thing is I called the gentleman at the morgue. I know this sounds really morbid, but it's just part of this story. My ex-husband was threatening that he was going to go have the body taken before I could get there. And so the gentleman at the morgue said to me, well, I'm sorry, ma'am, if he is his biological father, and whoever gets here first can do what they need to do with the body. So I was so distraught, and the gentleman could tell. And I said, listen, I've had custody of my own, this son, he's my son since he was 6 years old, and I cannot get there until Christmas day, the day after Christmas. So then the gentleman said, well, okay, do you have anything to show me that you can send me to prove that you are the biological parent and you have custody, you had custody, even though he's a grown man, right? And as soon as he said that, I realized I knew exactly where those papers were, because my son had handed me what I needed. And I just was completely speechless, as I am almost right now, because that was such a random, seemingly random exchange, right? And even when I picked him up when I was cleaning the house before my sister was going to get here, I knew I had to put them in this special drawer. And so I knew exactly where they were. And he himself had given them to me, because I would have never been able to find them. I mean, never. Obviously, they were up in an attic, right? Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't even have known where to go look. So that to me, there's no coincidence to that. And so when you said, what do I mean by his soul was ready to, knew what was coming. I'm not saying he consciously knew, but his soul knew. And his soul was also preparing my soul. And there's one other thing I want to share with you that is so remarkable, that again, my sister came, my son was gone up to Ohio, which is where he passed away, Michigan and Ohio, which where his daughter and my mom live up there. So my sister was there to my house for the holidays, like always. And it was December 22nd. And we were sitting at the table having tea. We were going to get ready to bake cookies with my other kids. And my phone was sitting there on the table. And I all of a sudden look at it and it says December 22nd. And I just had this overwhelming reaction. And I picked up my phone and I said, oh my God, it's December 22nd. And my sister looked at me and she goes, yeah, so? And I go, I don't know. She goes, well, what about it? And I said, I just remember slumping in my chair going, I don't know. I go, but it's an important day. And we laughed. We laughed because there was nothing important that we knew of. But later, the next day, I would learn that December 22nd is when my son passed away. Again, I feel, and my sister remembers that moment too, because it was just so weird. I'm like, oh my God, it's December 22nd. It's such an important day. And then we just laugh because there was nothing. You know, I really think my son sent me a message. You sent me a message somehow, some way, that moment, because why would I look at my phone? Why would I have that reaction? I mean, it was like, yes, this is an important day. So, you know, it's death is permanent as far as somebody's physical body. Yeah, I don't get to see my son. But again, I know there's so many things we could talk about for the next hour with the ways my son has shown me that his spirit, his soul is alive, and that he wants me to know he's with me. There's so many beautiful examples. In fact, hopefully one day soon I'll be writing about it, writing a book. I guess so. If anyone out there is listening to this, and this is how I get through knowing this has pulled my spirituality to a different level. This has helped me through this grieving process. All those things I just shared with you are really remarkable. I mean, remarkable. So me looking back and me looking in this last 2 years it's just an understanding that there's so much more to everything that meets the eye. You know, we tend to live in a 3D world, what we can see and feel and touch and smell and all of that. But there's, in my opinion, in my belief system, there's so much more than that. So, you know, grief is so, it's all encompassing, and it's definitely not linear. It's, it will have its way with you. It's almost like if you've ever got caught up in the ocean in a big giant wave where you can't get out of that wave. It's just going to do what it needs to do until it's ready to calm down. It's kind of like that. You just get, you know, one day you think you're doing pretty good. Next day you get slammed up with that wave again. But I hold on to all the beautiful parts that I just shared with you. And I know that there's more to this. And I'm still learning, but it's nothing obviously I would wish on anybody, but I will do my best to do it justice, if that makes sense.
So just a couple of things. What is it, because I know you've moved into the more spiritual side of things, and you know, you said Graham's with you spiritually, but also you have moved into where you say Graham was, where he had that epiphany when he said that all that stuff has happened to him so that he can understand and make a difference to other people. And that's exactly what you've done. I can't even talk.
Yeah, thank you. Keep my son alive, honor his life, and pay it forward. To me, that's how I honor him. To, you know, help other people through this or through whatever, but just to give, he gives me hope, and I want to give other people hope, because you can definitely lose hope going through this.
How do you keep your hope up? What do you do?
Well, you know, like I said, first of all, I'm not even kidding about remembering those most remarkable things that I just shared with you, because they're remarkable. And again, all of the things that I didn't share with you, that since he's passed, the ways he lets me know that he's here, it would be so, in my mind, it would be so disrespectful for me to see all these beautiful things he's doing for me, signs and so on, and to receive those and then just go back into a black hole and grieve and do nothing with that. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Also takes a lot of courage to do that, because if it was me, all I'd want to do would be to curl up in a corner and die.
Yeah, that's an option. You know, it's an option. It's not an option that I want to choose, because, again, I want to honor him. I want to share his life. I want him to know that, like now, I want to share all of who he was, not just his ending. And I'm very careful not to share how he died with just anybody unless they're willing to hear his story, because I'm not open for judgment. I'm open for one, you know, I could now I mean, I've always had so much compassion for people in general. That's just who I am. But people who have been sexually abused, I mean, you just don't realize the magnitude of how this affects somebody's entire life. And not only their life, but the people in their life. And it is such, it's so huge. So anytime I hear anybody say that's what's happened to them, oh my God, it, you know, it's just, you just, it's so much. It's so much. And just, gosh, if I could tell anybody that, is the self-hatred part that they hold. It's just so sad because they're such beautiful people and something happened to them, you know, and it's, there's nothing to hate, but somehow it turns into self-hatred and self-mutilation and self-abuse. And it's just this tragic, it's just a tragic trajectory of life. And, I'm not going to let his legacy stop with tragedy. You know, I'm going to bring his energy forward and his life. It's not going to be defined by that. And as mine is not going to be defined by the grief of my son's death, it's going to be defined by, okay, I can't change this outcome because believe me, I've tried to look at how in the world I could do that. And as ridiculous as that sounds, but I can bring an energy forward to people, for people. And it's just, it changes you in every single way. So the thing that I can say it's done for me is that it has exponentially turned the dial up on seeing life from what's important, and it illuminates the preciousness of life. As we started this conversation today by learning that Kobe Bryant, an NBA just superstar, is gone in a flash in a helicopter accident, you know, and everything can change in an instant. And we have to, those of us who haven't left the earth have an obligation maybe, or a sense of just life now is just ridiculously precious.
This might sound a little bit trite, but what did you do for yourself to pull yourself forwards? Because I can't imagine that, I mean, I don't even want to go there, I've got to be honest. I cannot imagine that initial feeling and being able to even consider life without your child. What did you do? How did you, what did you do for yourself? How did you move beyond it?
Well, I'll tell you one thing, your way of being in life will carry you through if you need it to. So what do I mean by that? For me, I was a very ritualized person. I mean, I always was up early and doing mindset work. And if you don't know, people who are listening aren't sure what that is, it's basically just self-development, personal development work. And also taking care of my health by exercising. So I had those things that were such a regimen for me that after something like this happens, your brain really does shut off as a preservation mechanism, because you cannot handle such a atrocity. But what doesn't shut off is your body's, at least my body's, rituals. So my body was still in the habit of getting up and doing those things. Right. Maybe not the very next day, if you know what I mean, but that's what my body knew to do. And that's what brought me through the worst days. It might sound crazy, but it was the disciplines in my life that it was so automatic for years and years that I didn't have to think about those things. So my body was able to carry me through. And I think that's what kept me out of being in the bed crying and just not being able to face the day. And I know many people who have had to deal with death like that, because that's what they, you know, I'm not judging anybody. I'm just saying for me. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the beautiful things that my son has done as signs to let me know. And we don't have enough time on this podcast for me to go into them, but I will share one with you. My son was cremated, and we took his ashes to Montana, which is a place that he really loved, and he loved nature and being free. And so when we thought about what would we do for his birthday and what would we do with his remains, I thought to myself, that's what he would love. So we went as a family to Montana, and my husband had taken him there actually a year earlier for his birthday on a guy's trip where they were fishing and hunting and shooting guns and just doing guy things. But he had a particular place that he loved in this like glacier park, actually. He loved the water flows there, the water rapids and so on. He had a particular spot. So that's the spot we went to disperse his ashes. And I wanted to be present. My mom was there, my sons, my other two sons, my husband, my sister, and this other gentleman who lives in Montana. And so I didn't want to take a lot of pictures, of course. So after we went down into the spot, we were dispersing his ashes. All of us took him turns. And then my husband, there was some left, and my husband took the last of the remains and was, you know, letting them go. And I thought, well, I'm going to get a picture now, because I just felt like it was time to get a picture. So I took a picture and I just put my phone away, and I didn't even look at it. And later when I was looking at it, and I took some more later when we walked through the park, but anyway, I was looking at the pictures later, and I don't even think it was that day. I think it was a couple of days later. His ashes are blowing in the wind, and they've formed into a heart.
Wow.
Yeah. And I was like, oh my God, what am I seeing? What I think I'm seeing. But the weird thing about the heart is I didn't look at that picture, right, when I took it. So after we went through the park that day, we took some other photos. Then we went into this little town in Montana, and I saw a tattoo parlor. I'm not a tattoo person, and I just said, I'm going in to get a tattoo. And everybody in my family about fell over, because I'm really not a tattoo person. And I went in there and got a tattoo of a heart on my wrist. But I hadn't seen the heart in the ashes yet, right? So I just was drawn to get this heart. And it's beautiful. I'm looking at it right now. Just a little heart. And so later when I saw the photo of the heart, I was like, oh my God. And since then, there's been numerous hearts that have shown up in things, in water and on windows. Just like I was cleaning my windows several months after my son died, and I was sprayed the window cleaner, it was the foamy kind, on the window. And right in front of my eyes, the big blob of foam that I sprayed turned into three hearts.
Oh.
And I have photos of these things, because even I wouldn't believe what I'm telling you. But it happened in front of my eyes, and I had enough presence of mind to get my phone and take this photo. So these are the kinds of things, and there's many, and I'm not going to go into all of them, obviously, that my son says, hey, I'm right here. And we have this symbol that we share. So again, I feel it would be so awful of me to go crawl in a ball when he's doing everything in his power to help me know we're still together. We're still together. And he still lives and he sees. And I just need to open up my soul's eyes. So, you know, there you have it.
I wish I could give you a big hug.
Thank you. I know. This really got pretty, I don't even know how this got, but it feels deep and heavy to me. I hope that whomever listens to it finds some hope and inspiration and love that transcends all realms. It transcends what we see here in this earth that we live in. There's so much more.
You've just been amazing, yeah, in what you've shared. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for having me. Again, I just hope that whoever unfortunately has to travel this journey can find some sense of hope. Hope is a beautiful thing. Hope and faith.
I'm just aware of the time now, so we'll wrap it up. Would you send me some of the photos that you were talking about? You know, the symbol, not necessarily the one with the ashes, but you know, the love hearts and things that Graham sent to you. And also, because one of the things I want to do is give people an access to connect with you. So like Facebook pages, web page. I mean, I know your Facebook page, obviously, but if there's anywhere else that you want me to put links to.
Yes, I would love that. I would love that so much. I would love to connect.
Because one of the things we didn't talk about today, and we will talk about it for sure, is that you know, one of the ways you got over this, or not got over this, because you haven't got over this, that's a really shocking expression. one of your tools that you've used to help move your life forwards is to share stuff with people. So, you know, your mindset stuff and your personal development stuff, you share it with people and it helps you as well as helping everybody else.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why I'm going to be writing this book for sure, because it'll be a book of hope for so many people. And for me, that is going to be a huge, I don't even want to say testimony. What will that be? It'll be a huge, almost memorial, but more than a memorial for my son, that his life will live on to touch people.
Yeah.
To touch people. I'm so honored to have been a guest on your podcast. I hope I shared or did it well.
I don't think I could have asked for anything else, my friend. I don't. You were just unbelievable.
Thank you. Thank you.
So, yeah. And thanks for sharing. It takes some courage to do what you've done.
You're welcome.
And especially because I just dropped this topic on you as well. Oh, well, I didn't. I said, I want you to know what's going on with you personally. And you went, oh, my God.
Yeah, we kind of switched topics because we have another important one for a future episode.
Yeah, we do.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Menopause, Marriage and Motherhood podcast. I'm Karen O'Connor. Join me next time for more conversation, laughter and fun as we navigate our way through all the things that midlife throws at us. Please click on the subscribe button so you get notifications of new episodes. And don't forget that all the links and information that we've spoken about in this podcast is available on the podcast page of my website. If you have any ideas for topics you'd like us to chat about, or if you have an inspiring story that you'd like to share, I'd love to hear from you. and constructive feedback is always welcome. Thanks so much for listening. I'm looking forward to talking to you again next time. Bye for now.